Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hello and welcome to Super Fan Chats, the show where we get really, really nerdy about no small roles. I'm Super Fan Han and I am joined today by most of the lovely other super fans, although Woo! We are missing Lord Crumpet. But guys, do you want to say hi?
Hi!
I want to say hi.
Oh.
I want to say howdy!
I was thinking maybe like introducing yourselves as well, you know, so people know who is speaking, but that's fine.
Look, if you're listening to the Superfan chats, I hope you know who the super fans are.
You better know. You better know by now.
They have how many other Superfan chats they can go and listen to? We say our names in other ones.
Yeah, you know what? We should make them work for it.
Yeah, figure it out.
Yeah, this is a serialized series. Yeah. We don't need to reintroduce ourselves each time.
I like the idea of Superman chats, actually. I bet there's quite a few of those.
I would be down to participate in those as well.
Chats for another day.
So today we are recapping.
I think we got to leave the giggles in. This is great. The complete breakdown.
I mean, one of the episodes is entitled Shots and Giggles.
Who's doing the first episode? Maybe we can just segue straight into that. Oh, okay. Well,
okay. So, Hannah, who is frazzled. If you want to take the first episode. And it's also warm, so we forgive you for that. But it's also, warm. I mean, I found this, and I'm sure the other listeners found this as well, or will be finding this as you are listening to it right now in your ear holes. It's actually been quite a long time since episode 54 came out. It's kind of good that you are here to refresh our memories on it.
Yes.
If your brain is working.
Yeah. Yes. Because it's pre-Dwayne.
Oh my God, it was pre the Further Adventures of Dwayne Fabulosa.
Yes.
Which were so good. But yes, today we're recapping episodes 54 through 57. So I am taking episode 54, as we have established.
Yes. So, Hannah, yeah.
What happens in episode 54, Superfan Han?
Tell us about Shopping and Strings.
Well, let me tell you all about Shopping and Strings.
Yay.
Mainly shopping happens in episode 54. There's a lot of shopping. They did do a lot of the shopping admin sort of off mic. Mm-hmm. So there's not the sort of negotiation about money. But everyone pretty much gets themselves some new bits and pieces. So Gwen got herself a whole new outfit and a bath, and she also decided she was going to read some smut in the bath. And I am very much looking forward to the full publication of The Ranger and the Nymph.
Yep.
Which I really hope will be some bonus content on the Patreon, to be quite honest.
I'll be honest, I never anticipated that there would be a part of this show where a character would climb into a bath and just read some smut that they've had of all the turns, or that it would be Gwendolyn. I wonder if Dwayne introduced her to that.
That kind of lifestyle,
Dwayne's a bad influence.
Seems like his kind of thing.
Except I think when she went with Dwayne, she did actually have the companion in the room with her.
That's true.
Because she decided not to this time. She was asked and she was like, no, I've got my books.
Yeah, I've got this filthy, filthy book. And then she decides to go out and basically flirt with Mossy, the catapult girl.
Oh, so cute.
Which was adorable. their little mm-hmm. friendship there blossoming. And then Gwen very much tries to look cool when she walks away and doesn't quite make it.
Yeah.
Doesn't quite make that performance role. We also had Guy. I don't think Guy really bought much, but he did start looking around, essentially trying to figure out whether he wanted to plan to run a music venue one day. He's kind of thinking about, if I bought a bar, put myself on 6 nights a week, which was, again, an interesting turn I didn't really expect.
Yeah.
You know, in the middle of all the drama, because, you know, the hideout, you know, exploded in the last few episodes and they're on the run from the Hex and there's all this stuff. And now they're just tooling around Vernock Rise, sort of like, oh, maybe we should get some spoons.
Yeah.
So the sense of urgency seems to have left a little bit.
Yeah.
Juna got a new tattoo and also bought some tattoo equipment. She got a version of Enkidu's tattoo. Or Enkidu's mark on her elbow, which will be really interesting to hear how that, showing him that goes down. Oren just bought a ton of stuff. Like, he just bought a lot of stuff. I didn't really pay attention to all the stuff that Oren bought.
Just rinsed through all his money.
There was so much stuff and he basically spent all of it. And there was a very cute moment where it was like, oh yeah, this makes sense because Oren's never really had money before. Mm-hmm. So he doesn't know how to save it. So he just kind of blows it all because he's never really had it, which was, I thought, was adorable.
Because they got like 200 gold and I think he spent about 180 something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, it was close to 190.
Yeah.
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 Yeah. And Enkidu kind of stepping into the role a bit of like party dad, like got loads of stuff for everyone else. Like he was like, I'm going to get useful things like tents because we keep sleeping outside, which again, so adorable. He's really like, oh yeah, what would be good for everyone? Mm.
For the one character who doesn't actually need to sleep. I think that was very telling that he's come a long way of how much he cares about the rest of the party now.
Oh my God, it was super cute. Yeah. It was so cute. That was kind of the first half of the episode. And the second half was really a conversation with Kirda,
mm-hmm.
which was very interesting. Mm-hmm. But didn't
very
really...
Very enlightening.
Yeah, but also not. Frustratingly not, which I think Daryl got particularly annoyed at.
Yeah. Where
he kept trying to get information and David was like, yeah, you don't really know. You can't tell. And we found out that there were some discrepancies in the way that Juna and Kirda were treated in terms of the balance. So he wasn't removed from his parents like she was, although he gets the sense that he was supposed to be removed from his parents. Mm-hmm. But it just didn't happen, and that's not really elaborated on why it didn't happen. Neither of them were really told very much. Neither of them have met anyone else before. There was the phrase, you're there to do, not to know. So it was like, you don't think about things, you just do it. You don't learn anything. And they both found out that their magic doesn't work on each other. So his magic also doesn't work on Juna when he tried to cast an illusion spell on the entire table and turn them all into Gwendolyn's. Yeah. Juna was the only one who did not look like a Gwendolyn. So it was interesting to find out some little tidbits about that.
Yeah.
And just how in the dark both Juna and Kirda are about actually what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't really get a whole lot more information than that. I don't know if you guys remember anything in particular that caught your attention, but it was pretty vague.
What, on the cult itself? And I'm going to call it a cult because
call it a cult.
Like it's very, very secretive. Like I think they talk about like nobody. There's no documentation on this. Like Kirda's looked for any kind of like history. Mm. On the seven petals and the generational thing, and there's nothing. However, we do know that there is this birthmark. We know that they all have some kind of ability, but it kind of sounds like their trainers taught them those abilities. So have the trainers kind of decided, would Kirda have been, it makes me wonder, would Kirda have been able to do some more like divination magic if he'd been chosen to go with Ginger and then, you know, Juna was supposed to do illusion magic?
Mm. Or is it more their innate abilities? Who knows? Mm. Like, there's no sense of, like, was Juna innately more predisposed to the divination side of things? So that's where her abilities were honed.
And then that was drawn out of her. Yeah.
Or was it Ginger's influence? Like, there's no, like you say, there's no information about that whatsoever. And they both find out neither of them know what side of the flower they're on, what petal they are. They don't know how the balance works. There's just
they know nothing,
just no information. Quite infuriating.
I have to say, I sympathize with Daryl's feelings about not wanting to be Dumbledored. Because it's one of those things.
Yes.
Look, it's a common thing. It's a common fantasy trope. It's in like every D&D game where somebody's trying to find something out. And for whatever reason, the people who know either aren't there or just don't want to tell them everything. Yep. And don't want to give them straightforward answers. And if you're playing a character who doesn't buy into that, or if you're just a person who doesn't buy into that, that can be the most frustrating yeah. thing where you're like, just tell me what the deal with the petals are.
Oh my God.
Who's who?
100%. I mean, I know yep. I would be like that because I was like that listening to it where I was like, everyone just do some insight checks. And then they all did insight checks and it revealed nothing.
Nothing.
It revealed nothing.
Yeah.
They were like, yeah, he doesn't really know. He's just trying to find out information. And I was like, David, what are you hiding?
I just find it so interesting that they're told to stay apart from each other. Like, you know, this is the main thing. Do not connect with each other. And there is that little bit at the end with the puff of wind that wasn't there before and, like, the connection yes. with each other. But mm-hmm. I don't know. Yeah, I didn't know if there's, like, a weird, like, Umbrella Academy, you know, apocalyptic event kind of thing when they all, like, you know, come together and their powers manifest or something. Like, you know, they kind of hinted to that at the end.
Mm-hmm.
But that's the only bit that really makes sense to me is like, oh, okay, actually, if these people are within, if they're touching each other and they're within each other's proximity for too long, there could be some kind of, like, major event that comes out of it. But keeping them in the dark about it, not telling them what's going on, so that they influence, that's the bit that I still can't wrap my head around.
Yeah.
And
Ginger remains extremely vague.
Yeah.
Even when June is like, Ginger, how close are you? Where are you? She's like, I'm about 4 weeks away and I'm one region over.
Yeah.
Which means I could literally be anywhere.
Yeah.
Within a month's travel.
What was she up to?
And travel by what? Travel by horse?
Yeah, it
travel
sounds like she's running.
Just running.
She said she's running
by
the whole
foot.
Way.
Yeah.
Oh, that's true. Yeah.
I think she's bonus action dashing the whole way there. And, you know, action
oh
as well.
Oh, gosh.
She's going to take some exhaustion points.
Just hiked up her skirt. She's just running through the countryside.
She's got all her bags with her. She's been shopping.
Yeah. I'm coming!
Theory time.
Mm.
Given that Kyrda's magic is all illusion-based, do you find it suspicious that he can change his face and the face of others? Where have we heard that before? Just throwing it out
Ooh,
there.
Oh, you're thinking Faceless Footman?
Well,
Ooh.
As soon as he said he was changing everyone's faces, including his own, to the face of another person who he had seen, and it was Gwen again,
mm-hmm.
my little alarm bell in my head went ringing. I'm probably completely off. But I'm just putting it out there on the off chance it's right in about 100 episodes time.
I mean, I don't know that you're necessarily off. I wouldn't say off because there's something about illusion magic. I've always found it quite like, you know, like trickster god kind of thing, you know, illusion, very Loki, right? Mm. You know, and Loki often like plays that line between what's, you know, being a good guy. He's never quite good. He's always that gray area or bad.
Mm-hmm.
And there's something about the attitude of Kyrda Tagadan that sets me on edge.
Yeah.
For example, when Orin like picks up on the thing that he's saying about the orphans and is like really interested mm-hmm. in that bit of information, it is so hard to nail Kyrda Tagadan down to that storyline.
Yeah.
You know, and try and get that basis, which kind of makes me think that, you know, he doesn't want to divulge him. I don't know that he is necessarily a good character.
Yeah.
I feel like he falls into that like gray area. I'm not sure about Faceless Footman, only because it sounded like in the escape in the Rostal chase, it sounded like when the Faceless Footman was squaring off with Enkidu, the face kind of like it was more of a like shapeshifter thing where you saw like the actual physicality of this thing change. But I mean, you know, I'm not beyond the idea that Kyrda could be involved. He certainly traveled a lot. Probably has some dodgy connections. You know. Who the hell is Lyanna?
Who is Lyanna?
It would be really, really useful to know if, you know, if they just wrapped up that Faceless Footman issue.
I know, right?
We might actually know something about that.
Yeah.
You know, how they just left a shape-shifting serial killer on the loose.
Yeah.
Guys.
Imagine if they went back now. I mean, it sounds like all the Hex are in Fallous Vale, so, you know, they could go back and fix their problem now, come back.
Yeah.
I think we should just get more spoons. Yeah, just stick with the spoons.
I was going to say one thing for me, mostly listening to shorter campaigns or campaigns that are more, more like we do this, complete it, do that, complete it, do that, complete it. Mm-hmm. It's really interesting to listen to the fact that like this is, I think this functions a lot more like a typical D&D campaign, which is to say the party will like will do one thing and then get most of the way done with it. And then potentially move on to something else because there's something else that comes along. And like you end up with a lot of loose ends in the world that the party has not yet fully addressed.
Yeah.
And I think that also ties in with like what you were mentioning, Hannah, the urgency that at the beginning of this arc, I think there was like an, okay, we got to get all the spoons. We got to do this as quickly as possible. And then like very quickly when they were like, oh, okay, it doesn't, the speed that with which we get the spoons is actually not that paramount. And in fact, we're going to, oh no, the hex are here. And then we started doing stuff with that. You know, we really got sidetracked and it has now turned into like a mini campaign almost.
Yeah.
In the midst of like with the overarching, the spoons are like the big bad or this competition is like the major plot. But along the way, we're just going to complete all these other side plots, which I think, didn't David say that he was inspired by Pokemon for this arc on some level? I mean, if you watch the Pokemon anime, this absolutely fits. Like, you'd think that Ash would just go for the gyms, gyms all the time, but like,
I'm going to be a spoon master. Then there'd be like a linear path through all the different, you know, places to get the spoons, but instead, oh my God, look at all the stuff that's happening. Maybe let's go shopping.
Yeah.
But in the meantime, what's happening with the Wingthrups and their giant golem army? That's still happening. Exactly.
They're still in the background. I'm sure Enkidu's connected. You know, he's he's Bluetooth to one of them.
Oh my God. He's part of the cloud.
They're in the spoons.
That's another interesting thing about this, and as just speaking as like a macro, sort of a meta level. We don't have at least from my perspective, we don't really have a clear overarching story for the whole campaign. There isn't like the end game. You know that down that way, they're the big boss, like is the big bad is over there. And is like if you're talking basically any other fantasy series, with Harry Potter you have Voldemort, with Lord of the Rings you have Sauron, with like Eragon you have Galbatorix, and so on and so on and so on. There's always like the big bad, and then we have to complete a bunch of other missions. Or like Legend of Zelda, it's always Ganon or Ganondorf, you know. It's but in this like there's like four or five different people that it could be. There are multiple people who could even be a big bad. Yeah. We just don't know.
Yeah.
The interesting thing about it as well is that they're not, you could argue that Kral again was doing things for the right reasons, you know, or potentially doing things for the right reason and then got twisted to the point that he is bad. And Erida, again, you know, they're potentially just do it, you know, this is their way of saving somebody, but they're just doing it the wrong way. And, you know, what they're doing is unethical. There's no clear big bad guy, which is probably why they keep joking in the episodes like, oh, they're the BB in this scenario, because it's kind of everyone's a little bit bad and everyone's a little bit good. It's very like the Seven Petal Flower, actually.
Yeah,
like there's the balance, and then there's like light and dark, and they can switch in all directions. But David is I mean, clearly a very clever DM. And he has said, like, the clues are all there to, like, piece things together. That there's clearly some kind of, like, tapestry that's... And it's starting to weave its way together. I think particularly in these episodes.
Yeah. Well, maybe that's a good point to start talking about the next episode, because we might get a little bit more information, maybe. Episode 55. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Do I hear my name being called on the wind? For the road to Forlos Vale? That's me. So, I made a fairly detailed summary of this episode. We begin as everyone is resting for the night. Guy wants to buy matching onesies, which I thought was very cute.
Yeah.
And everybody piles into the same bed, except for Enkidu, who tries sleeping for the first time since the Erida incident, since the Wingthrup incident. And it appears that he actually does at least go through the mechanics of sleeping. He's able to experience the sensation of sleeping. It does not dream, but even when Gwendolyn, like, inspects him, he appears to be asleep. That we get at the very beginning, Orin teases the idea of writing a letter to Eliwick, and Juna at that point asks him not to mention her or Kirda. Then the watch itself goes fairly uneventfully. There are some few small conversations, but nothing super substantial. But then the next big thing that happens is we try to name the horses.
Oh, yeah.
A lot of names get floated. They almost settle on Baby and David.
Solid choices.
And then almost Sam and Hannah.
I know.
How exciting
so
was that?
So close. It was so close to being a horse.
It's a dream of mine.
And then they decide to make it a vote. Yeah, and I think they had Bess A and Bess B as the placeholder names until the fans could vote. And they determined that it would take about 6 days to get to Forlow's Vale. So we go into a bit of a montage. We have a scene between Enkidu and Gwendolyn. We're hardcore teasing those Gwenkidu shippers with a very, like...
Please make like, it happen.
Look, I'm Team Dwendolyn. Dwendolyn Fabulosa all the way. But
are you against a thruple?
Dwayne isn't.
Yeah.
I mean, this would be the second thruple that Enkidu's involved in, though. So we're going to have to check with him.
Listen, he gets around.
Sextuple.
He's a popular guy.
Sextuple.
He's very stoic.
I mean, he's got so many people inside him already. He doesn't need any more.
Hey!
Wow.
But yes, I can't deny there's genuine chemistry there. Am I forgetting? There were two things, actually, because Gwendolyn makes reference to having failed her exams mm-hmm. because she was distracted by somebody she was in love with, mm-hmm. which is why she eventually was sent to the DeBarges. Do we know who she was in love with at that point?
I don't believe we do.
No, because, I mean, is it canon that Gwendolyn met you, or met Dwayne even, at the wedding or around the time of the wedding, right?
Hired to play for the wedding.
Yeah, in which case there's somebody in her past that she's actually or was in love with before Dwayne and clearly loved Dwayne more
Mystery
than that.
Person.
It's very interesting.
Mystery.
Yeah. And then Enkidu makes reference to a female friend of his who reminds him of Gwendolyn. And I wasn't sure who that was either. Do we know who that is?
Is it one of his inside friends who's in him?
It might be Hina.
I wasn't sure.
But
yeah, I was thinking maybe Hina.
Potentially.
It could be. He literally just says, hey, could you talk to my friend sometime and show her there might be another way?
Oh, yeah, you're right.
Yeah. And I'm not, it sounded almost like it was a separate, like not even a person who's inside of him, but like a person that they could run into. That and maybe he could easily have been referring to one of his inside friends, but it sounded like it was like a buddy of his from back in the day.
Or Erida.
You know, Erida's in love.
His good friend Erida.
And decide is having to-
in love with control.
I think we stick a pin in that for the next time Daryl's on No Small Questions.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'd be really interested in pulling on that thread, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's your job, Sam.
Yes. All right. Write that down. The next scene is an interesting one. They encounter a green Eladrin. This is the first time we've encountered an Eladrin, I believe, in the campaign from Aelin.
Oh, God, this guy.
Named, I think, Wester. It's either Wester or Wesker, but I think it's Wester. Guy and him hit it off right off the bat. They both come from the same place. He offers to sell them a Volpertinger, which is a real mythical being from Germany, not a D&D creature. Mm. So I don't know if Baby David just knew of the creature and was like, hey, let's stick one of these in, or if there's like a homebrew something out there. I will read what a Volpertinger is in mythology, just so everybody knows.
Ooh, yeah, please do. Yep. I did search this, by the way. I couldn't find it.
Yes, it is an animal said to inhabit the alpine forests of Bavaria and Baden-Württemberg in southern Germany. It has a body comprising various animal parts. There's generally wings, antlers, a tail, and fangs, all attached to the body of a small mammal. In this particular case, it was a hamster. The most widespread description portrays the Volpertinger as having the head of a hare, the body of a squirrel, the antlers of a deer, and the wings and occasionally the legs of a bird.
Oh my god, I think I've seen pictures of this thing. I think I've seen pictures of this thing before.
There are stuffed animals of them.
Cute, fucked up bunny.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, there's two different, like, because America also has the jackalope.
Yes.
Which I believe is a hare with antlers.
Yeah.
But it doesn't have wings or anything like that. This is a lot more elaborate.
Freaking so European.
Yes.
Oh my God, I need to look this thing up. How do you actually spell it? Because I tried, like, what I thought was phonetically, and it didn't.
I have a W-O-L-P-E-R. T-I-N-G-E-R.
Okay, I mean, I fell at the first hurdle. Yeah.
Yeah, W-O-L-P-E-R-T-I-N-G-E-R. I was pronouncing the W like it was in German, so yeah. Wolpertinger.
Mm. Cool.
Oh my God. Okay, no, I have seen these things. I have seen something like this anyway.
Yeah.
Maybe even in game.
Mm.
I mean, it's cute as hell.
Yes, I looked it up on D&D Beyond, Forgotten Realms, just Googled it. I think they exist as homebrew monsters, but I do not think they exist as official creatures in Dungeons & Dragons. So that's a slot waiting to be filled, folks. Baby David's doing your work for you, Wizards.
Apparently they're on World of Warcraft. There you go.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's cool. So yeah, Guy buys a cloak for himself. He buys the Vulpertinger for Juna. They also, Gwen buys the calming comb. Enkidu, I feel like this was a surprisingly mischievous move for Enkidu. Prestidigitates 20 gold
yes.
into Orin's pouch. So he can buy a special whistle that could be heard by up to 5 people of the whistler's choice within a mile. Very cool little really item cool. there. And they also buy a candle with a flame that only the person holding it can see.
They've already just gone shopping, and they decided, let's do more shopping.
Yeah.
But, I mean, these were, like, interesting items that, you know, I think David said in the last episode, he sent them, like, a price list for all these things, and they picked things off of there. This is, like, you're not going to find these on, like, D&D Beyond or in any of the books or something like that. These are all David creations. I'm still kind of annoyed that they didn't go for the not hot pot, because...
Yo!
Like, I can't think off the top of my head how you would use that thing, but I bet you there's a way.
Yeah. Fire resistance.
Yeah. Mm. Just wear it on your head.
Possibly even fire immunity if you're small enough.
Oh.
Like, it could be pretty useful. I don't know. But I also found it very interesting. First of all, I enjoyed the haggling that occurred, but I found the references to the Feywild really interesting as well.
Mm-hmm.
Because I don't think we've had really extra planar stuff has not been a huge theme of this campaign or the world thus far.
No.
So it's really interesting to be like, hey, I got this from a straight up other plane of existence. You want to buy this exotic pet?
I think there's only been mention of a demonologist. And I made an assumption in my D&D brain that that meant something about another plane where demons come from. But it's entirely possible that demons exist on the material plane in this world. Mm-hmm. So there's not been like a particular allusion to, oh, there are definitely other planes.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm still hoping that we go out to Aeland because it, you know, firstly for all of Gaius's storyline, which I think we may get into that through delving more into the Hex anyway. But also, like, you know, do they have more of an affinity with the Feywild? If there's loads of elves there, you know, you've got your Eladrin, you've got your kind of like Fey elves coming over, more creatures. I don't know. I think it might be quite a nice, like, little break from the campaign to just go into the Feywild for a little bit and sing with some flowers or something.
Get some more spoons.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's where the rest of the spoons are.
Face spoons. They're the best spoons.
This turns into just a full Pokemon campaign. There's a whole different set of spoons in the Feywild region that you can go to.
In the Hoenn, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Too much water. Too much water in the Feywild region.
Johto region.
Exactly. And each one has a different theme song. They have to record a new theme song for each successive location.
They get different companions. There's a new league. New big bad.
Yeah. They stay the same age.
Yes.
And all their old people are
like
written out.
Fey Crow.
Yeah, like Dwayne shows up one time after they leave. It's like for one big episode and that's it. So... the next thing that happened, they decided to finally attempt to swindle this man out of money by paying him using some of the fake coins. They managed to pay him using 8 of them. But they pull their money together, they buy all that stuff, spend most of the rest of their money, I believe. And as they're leaving, the Eladrin says that the Wolpertinger's name is Turnip. The party departs. Along the way, Juno rolls a dirty 20 to socialize Turnip, but nobody can actually understand the words he's saying or the sounds he's making until Orin casts Comprehend Languages, and it turns out that Turnip is actually asking for food. His real name is the sound of rustling leaves in the wind, so they decide to call him Russell. And apparently, Ruana dislikes Russell for some reason. I think they chalk it up to like competition for attention,
jealousy.
I feel like she knew,
Which I do have to tip my non-existent hat to David for teasing this, just introducing a little element that when you look back on it,
the warnings were there.
Exactly.
It did make me wonder as well whether like did Ruana, back in her witchy form, I'm assuming she would have spoken Sylvan. So maybe there were like bits of information that she was picking up through knowing that language. Like she was in the woods, she was around animals, she was very connected to the Henge. It would make sense that she would speak the language of the forest. Yeah. So I was wondering, like, was there a little like bit of information or just knowing more about this kind of creature, maybe her connection to the Feywild, that instantly was like, this is a bad deal. But, I mean, she kept her beak shut about it, didn't she?
Yeah.
Her little owlbear beak, micro owlbear beak.
So cute.
But along the way, we actually have, a very important conversation. Juna apologizes to Enkidu for choosing him during the Wingthrup trial. Enkidu admits that he chose Juna as well. I have to, again, tip my hat to both Daryl and Vicky playing the heck out of that scene.
Yeah.
It was a scene that absolutely needed to happen at some point, and I like that it happened now.
It felt like really good timing.
Yeah, and really sincere, like you say as well. Like, I just kind of like that in order to kind of put his like troubled heart to rest there, she kind of just was like, I did the same thing, mate. It's all cool.
Yeah, what a conversation to have. Like, hey, sorry I got you killed. like you're permanently changed forever. You now are part of a hive mind. Sorry about that, bro.
You're not even very human evil anymore. Hive mind.
Yeah. Exactly. His actual agency may have been permanently affected. He may be like for all we know, he's just a liability. Like Erida could be just using him as a camera, and he's just
she is.
He's cookies. Yeah. Erida gave them cookies, and now they can't disable the cookies. They're just with them no matter where they are, giving information on their browsing habits. But the next thing that happens is that Orin writes the letter to Eliwick and proceeds to read it to the group. Yeah, so he mentions the greenhouses, he mentions the Hex, who have bothered her before, evidently. He lists some of the adventures he had along the way. It was interesting how it appears that he'd never mentioned the party before, but just briefly mentions them, and then focuses way more in on the alchemist that they met.
Yeah.
Like, he found that way more interesting than, like, oh yeah, I have these, like, potential lifelong friends. but I met an alchemist! And they were really, they were smart, let me tell you. He asks about the 7 petals. He refers to himself as being maybe a member of a family of artificers, essentially a Wingthrup. He mentions that Oskin and Jasana might have been sent there and asks her to look out for them if she encounters them. He also asks her to say hi to Dawn or Dorn, I wasn't sure, who has a he pronoun, and also maybe Killian.
Yeah.
He is initially like, yeah, and Killian. Well, maybe. Yeah, I guess. Like, it wasn't really clear if it was like what the relationship with Killian is there. And then signs it Orin Quill.
Oh, he's so mysterious.
Yeah.
It's so clever because we've been asking for context and backstory from Ben, you know, for Orin. And what he's done here is just given us a whole load more questions. He's basically put in a bunch of names and kind of little hints towards things without actually answering any of the questions. Very well done, Ben. Well done there.
Yes. Yeah.
Absolutely.
I think Killian may be... Do you remember the soldier he alluded to when he was on the boat and Guy was talking to him?
Yes, I wondered that.
The way, it was a very similar way he played the talking about and then not wanting to talk about and the kind of hesitancy, even for Orin. That would be my suspicion, is that that's mm-hmm. the name of the soldier, perhaps. But I may be wrong.
I got the same impression that, like,
He
and Killian had some kind of thing in the past.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And it may not have ended so well.
What kind of ex is this? Yeah.
Yeah. And then that night, we have a big old twist. Enkidu's passive perception is not high enough, and Russell proceeds to rob them blind.
Oh, no.
He steals everything that they bought,
yep.
along with a bunch of other magical items. It sounds like he basically cleared Orin out, almost.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And nobody noticed until the next morning. He left all the gold, so that was nice.
The thing is, David was so clever, because he actually said in the whole thing, it's like, okay, you know, your passive perception is not high enough, but he did see this little creature rummaging around in Orin's bag for quite some time,
mm-hmm.
and then going off to the tents and stuff. He spelled it out for them the whole way along, just like, you can do nothing about this. It was such a weird thing. Like, in my head, I was screaming, like, oh, what's going on there? What's going on there? But they're just like, oh, I'm so glad nothing bad happened in the night. Oops.
That sneaky little thing.
Oh, Vulpating is
so cute, though.
Yep.
Do we think that this is something, this is like a move that that they run, like, frequently on people?
It feels like a well thought out scam that has worked many a time. I was wondering if a lot of the magic items that they bought were ones that had actually been previously stolen by Russell off other people.
That's how he accumulates his whatnots.
And so he'll probably be selling whatever Russell has stolen off them.
Yeah, probably started with just the Vulpatinger, and then the Vulpatinger picks up some things, like you said, and just built up. I mean, I don't want to generalize, but, you know, they did introduce him as being a character very, very similar to Guy. And we know that Guy is very capable of underhanded things, that in a lot of ways, it's kind of obvious. I think they got caught up in the grandeur of the situation, like how much fun they were having haggling and chatting with this guy, and, like, you know, the banter, like you say, between him and Guy, that they kind of let their defenses down a little bit, where normally they might have been a bit more like Enkidu at that moment of just like, let's just get out of here. And then obviously David did the best thing of like, here's a cute thing, be distracted by the cute thing. The cute thing is yours now.
Mm-hmm. He led with the cuteness.
Mm.
Yeah.
Easy way into these guys' hearts.
It came from Patreon, by the way. Do you remember the Patreon poll?
Oh, yeah.
He described it as a cute fuzzy pet.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a world-building poll back in May.
Right.
And there were, six different options. And that was the one, which was a traveling salesman tries selling them a cute fuzzy pet.
Oh, wow. Well played.
God,
well
it's
played,
our
David.
Fault.
It's always our fault, isn't it?
No. Because the Patreon said tries to sell them a cute fuzzy pet.
This is true.
This
doesn't
true.
Say completely swindles them and fakes them out with the cuteness.
Yeah.
Forcibly sells them.
But what else is it gonna do? Yeah.
Also, here's a question. Mm-hmm. Why didn't they take the why didn't they take the money? Why did Russell leave the money?
It's a good question.
Why only, like, surely, unless they're using the magical items for some other purpose, I would assume that you would take the money as well.
Yeah.
That's true.
Maybe they can get more money out of it. I don't know how much space is within a Vulpatinger's cheeks. but I'm guessing with like the lots, did they get the lots of lids? They definitely got like the candle and the
comb. They got the candle, the comb, the whistle,
the cloak, yeah,
and Russell. But he also stole the icing, the frosting. He stole the frosting, the anti-frosting. He stole
Which
a potion as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, in the cheeks. I wonder if Russell got high on the way back. I love this image of like flying from side to side.
The next time we see him, he's a full junkie.
Yeah.
Like, he and Wester are just fully like they're frosting fiends.
Oh, some more frosting would be nice.
Oh, the voice. Shall I lead us on, guys?
Yeah. Why not? Yeah.
So this worked out quite well because this was the episode that I happened to edit. So I actually know this one quite well. So It was quite fortuitous that it ended up being my episode, which was episode 56, which was A Map to the City. And then at the start of the episode, well, at the top of the episode, before we even hear the credits, we have the naming of the horses.
Yay.
I am a horse.
Yay.
Yes, Pip and Lord Crumpet.
You are.
I am so happy. I want to know whether I'm the white one or the brown one, though. So can someone please tell me what colour horse I am? That would be great.
What would you prefer?
Yeah, if you had to choose.
Probably the white one. I want to be like, Gandalf's, what's it called? Shadowfax.
Shadowfax.
I want to be Shadowfax.
Yeah. Oh, that'd be dope.
Pippafax. Run, Pippa. Show me the meaning.
I
want
to be Shadow Pip. Which one do we prefer, Pippafax or Shadow Pip?
Pippafax sounds like, do you remember the old like journal things that you used to have?
Yeah,
Filofax.
Filofax.
It's where I keep all my no small roles lore.
In your Pippafax.
In my Pippafax. So, in the actual episode, we start with Vicky's very good idea, which is rather than turn the entire wagon round and go after Wester for a day and a half and lose more time, is to send Ruana after Wester instead. So they turn her into a hawk, send her off, and I think Juna's plan is to call her back after 72 hours if she hasn't been aware of her kind of appearing in the void. And they start heading towards Forlos Vale. They arrive at Forlos Vale. It's a massive city. It's very loud and noisy.
Oh, my God.
Isn't it such an amazing... I love the way that David described this. Gwen's quite
overwhelmed.
Have you
seen the map as well?
I love the map.
Just saying, the map of the city. That map of the city is bigger than the map of my entire campaign. just putting it out there. Like, it almost makes me, when somebody creates a city that big, though, it makes me, as a player, because I'm clearly a chaotic person, want to go to every single building and talk to every single person just to see how mapped out this thing is. Like, for example, Jeremy, when you introduced City of the Black Rose, I was like, let's go to every town.
Every neighborhood into every district.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You are a DM's nightmare.
Yes.
How
There's
many
so
new
many
improvised
places, though,
characters would he have to come up with?
You just name them after chocolate.
Like,
it's
malty.
Fine.
Yeah, exactly.
That's actually a good question. Do you think that is this like a Journey to the West Buddha and Sun Wukong situation where if they go to a place, then like if they go to a specific place in Forlos Vale, then the events are there? It's like, okay, now it's like, say they're like, oh, we really want to go to Corfeld. And then it's like, all right, cool. Well, you're going to Corfeld, and now, oh, look, would you believe it? The things that needed to happen are in Corfeld. Or do you think that it's like he has specific things in specific places and he needs to try and herd them towards those spots?
I think maybe both.
I feel a little bit like David's a more of a second one. Like, I feel, because I feel like so much ticks on in the background, like there's so many consequences, I feel like David's got ideas for all these different bits, and if they don't end up going to one, he's like, well, guess this is gonna happen then, like you know, if Gwendolyn doesn't hide her identity, well, guess she's gonna get kidnapped then, you know, like it's not like, oh, this was definitely going to happen, but there are consequences that will happen if they miss certain things, is the sense
and
that I get.
And he do love consequences, doesn't he? But yeah, I think you're probably right. And he kind of, he does express that a little bit when he talks about the different districts, because I think he says like, oh, this is where the school is. What's it called? The
Decorum.
Where the Decorum school. And then, you know, this is where the Arcanist Consortium is. And this is where Time of Prevost is going to be. So there was a little bit of that, that I wonder if he's just built main things around that district. But yeah, I don't know. Are there shops in each district? Are there different NPCs? Are there quest givers in these things? Yeah, I'm kind of excited by that.
Is the Faceless Footman hiding in one of the districts?
Yeah, there's one in each
it
district.
Could be everywhere.
Is Crawl in another?
Because I'm still so angry about the Faceless Footman. The Faceless Footman. You got, I'm so angry I can't speak.
We have to talk
they
about
never,
it every time.
Never sorted it out. It's a mystery. I'm just left hanging.
Is Dwayne and Mildock for some reason?
Oh, yes, he should be. I want conversations between Dwayne and Prevost.
Yeah.
That would be great. So the party get directed to various places. There's lots of places on the map that they get told where everything is. They ask for a map and the guy doesn't have one. Malty doesn't have one. But he sends them to the city hall in the Vale. They go to Wrighton because that's where they've been told is the best place to get sort of cheap lodgings and stable the horses there. Then Oh, Enkidu uses his criminal contact for the first time as well. He finds a pickpocket, asks about some powder in the city, and is told that our six-sided friends are in town. So, yeah, more hex, should we wish to go after them. They grab the map, they talk to the person at the info desk and find out that Berion and Prevost both are in town. They get their map. They get told that Prevost is speaking later that day, find out where a few more other things are. Then Enkidu does his inside check and gets a dirty 20. So we get to talk to Gilgamesh again, or Enkidu and Gilgamesh have another conversation, which this conversation left me feeling quite uneasy for the first time about Gilgamesh, I'll be honest. Like, up until this point, I was like, yeah, this is a guy we can get behind and he sort of seems quite solid. And now I'm not so sure, because after kind of talking about that it feels more disconnected between them, Enkidu kind of admits that he's struggling. And then they talk about how to sort of shake things up and remove Berion. And Gilgamesh decides that it might be a good idea to try and remove Berion, but make it look like it was Prevost's fault, which seems quite sneaky and underhanded and was quite unexpected, I thought, personally.
Yeah, he kind of said it's not how we do things in the light, but I don't know. I've got this horrible feeling that now whenever he does an inside check, runs down the back of my spine, that it's not actually Gilgamesh anymore. That it's the Errida copy. Yeah. And this would very much be an Errida tactic of finding your way to the crown. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, I hadn't considered that.
But then you might be right. It might just be that maybe Gilgamesh is a little bit of a dick.
I mean, we've had questions as to whether Gilgamesh and all of Enkidu's inside friends are even real. And even if Enkidu is really Enkidu from like day one, like who is the primary host?
Yeah.
Is it really Enkidu? What is the identity? Like, so we genuinely, I think we really don't actually know who any of these personas are that are inside him. Like, we can't rely on Enkidu's recollection.
Well,
especially
also,
not now he's been erided.
Part of what's so weird about it is, let's assume that when we met Enkidu, like, what we saw at face value was to some extent true. That he was a guy who had a bunch of friends who somehow got essentially imprisoned inside of him. When he dies and gets broken, the impression I get is that essentially when he died, his brain got, like, broken down into, like, code. Like, it was the information that makes up Enkidu.
Yeah.
Similar to, like, how teleporters allegedly would work.
Yeah.
How they break you down and take the information that is you and assemble it in another place. So even though the other you died, there's a new you who has all of your memories and is now alive.
Yeah.
What about the friends? Does that mean that the friends also got dispersed and then reconstituted in a new form? Does it mean like the friends' spirits were let loose and then they then flew back into this new Enkidu that was created? Or is it all just like an Errida-based copy? There's a lot. The impression seems to be that at least Enkidu thinks he's real because we've heard him have conversations with Errida. But yeah. There's so many, like, the actual, like, logic and mechanics of it is very interesting to explore.
Because when they spoke to the guys in the Codex, that was very much, they were talking to data. They were talking to the things that they knew in life and that they were able to relay. There seemed to be a particular lack of soul, or whatever you would constitute to being a soul, like, what makes a person a person. And that is kind of the vibe that I got from that chat. And it makes me want to now go back to listen to the last time that Daryl used Gilgamesh, which I think was even Wingthrup Arc. Did he use? I feel like there was
a Gilgamesh
fight where
in
he was
the,
able
in like
to
the
use Gilgamesh
thing.
Yeah,
there might well have been another time since then, but that's the last one I remember.
It'd be interesting, I think, to go back and like listen to that conversation and see whether David is playing something new with this, or whether it's just these are the kind of the tactics that they're going to need to get to the throne.
Or whether Gilgamesh was always like this on some level, we just never actually saw it before.
Yeah.
Because we never had the opportunity, never came actually up against that particular situation.
Yeah.
It's another question for Daryl, guys.
Write him down.
I think no matter what the answers are about this Gilgamesh situation, we can all agree that it's epic.
Yes.
It is the epic.
It is epic.
Gilgamesh.
Yes.
You got it. There was the joke.
I was slower. After this inside check, they head to the...
Sorry, Hannah's head's in her hands.
No, I'm glad. That was the
I'm
joke
fine.
I was making.
No, I got it. I'm fine.
Right, we head up to Mill Dock. There are mills and docks. Surprise.
Hey.
Find a crowd by a platform and they go, aha, this must be where Prevost is going to speak. So kind of push inwards to the side. And there's some guards around keeping an eye on the thing. The crowd continues to grow. Doors open behind the platform. And then once the doors open, there's a bunch of people come out who look quite wealthy and noble. Tymon Prevost is one of them. But, and here was the kind of the cliffhanger bombshell drop, also is Kasula.
Mm.
And everyone goes nuts.
Mm-hmm.
As did I. That was a name that I was not expecting to come up.
Yeah.
But it does make sense given... Gwen's background and her family's background and the House of Decorum thing. Yeah, it makes perfect sense that Kasula would be in some way affiliated with one of them.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just crazy that happened, I think, within an episode or two of the last mentioning of Kasula. Like that Gwendolyn was talking about her training and like this could have happened at Fallas Vale for her then to be a big part of this movement.
She even mentioned Kasula in episode 54 because she was wanting to get some kind of weapon that was like Kasula's. I think it was like a metal fan that actually looked like a fan, but she couldn't find it in Vernock. She didn't think there was anyone good enough to make it in Vernock Rise. And she was talking a bit about Kasula then.
And she mentioned her in 55.
I think
she mentioned her in this episode briefly.
It's madness. Yeah. Oh my God. It's like preluding to what was about to happen. And at least she can nick the war fan now. It's great. You know, she's pretty damaged by the time she actually comes to meet her.
Just slip the fan off of her and be like, the villains, they took it. Yeah. They stole it.
It's pesky teleporting people.
Damn you, Giggles.
Giggles.
Oh, I loved this episode, though, so much. I loved the introduction of the city. I loved how big it was. Mm-hmm. Like, the fact that they've been thinking about, we want to go to the Merseylands to see what's going on with Orin, and also the Woden Isles. And, you know, we want to go to Splinter Falls because, you know, June is going on about how, like, the magic there would be interesting. We've been trying to get to Fallas Vale for ages. And I feel like you could run a campaign here.
Yeah.
Like easily. In the same way that within the Forgotten Realms, you can run an entire campaign within Waterdeep. This had that same kind of scale for me. And almost made me wish that they'd waited to spend all of their money until they got here. Because you better believe there's going to be so many magic items and scrolls and like interesting things going on here. Like, I want to see the seedier parts of this city, like the gambling
stuff. I want to see the Arcanist Consortium.
Yeah.
Would they be able to get a Wolpertinger called Turnip?
Well, they didn't this time either, so...
yeah. Well, I'm sure there's like an exotic pet trade, right?
Yeah.
There's got to be an exotic pet trade. They could find another Wolpertinger and name it Turnip.
Oh, I bet the Wingthrups would be involved in that, what with all their elemental trapping.
Yeah. I mean, Enkidu walks into the city. Within 6 minutes, he's got a human equivalent of a Wolpertinger pickpocket.
That's
true.
new friend that he just sidles up to is like, hey, need to score.
It really is Pokemon, isn't it? Like, I'm just gonna catch this little guy and this little guy, just collect them.
I do love that episode where Ash Ketchum buys drugs. It's just amazing.
Oh yeah.
That's a solid one.
I didn't see that one on there. Saturday morning cartoon.
This whole conversation reminds me, it's making me think, do Enkidu's dream of electric Wolpertingers.
I would listen to that podcast. I mean, I'm actually looking at you here, Jeremy, because you like short campaigns. I think
like a miniseries starring Enkidu. Like it's just a Blade Runner. It's a Blade Runner inspired.
Oh my God, yeah. I would love that.
I would so live for that.
We have Daryl come over and play Enkidu in Mavros.
We don't know who has been erudited or not.
Yeah, exactly.
And people don't know if they're part of the Codex.
Yeah, oh my God, you could do like a glitch in the system kind of campaign where it's actually all happening within Erida, and this is like the prime.
Oh my God, it's like Blade Runner meets the Matrix.
Yeah.
Yeah. The implication is that we've always been Erida and they just didn't know.
Yeah. And he befriends another, one that was about to be turned into a battery, or maybe they got codified as they get turned into batteries. And it's like the journey of the two of them working through the levels of code to get to the primeval Erida.
I love
David, new campaign idea for you.
It's So we've come up with about three different spin-offs.
Bonus content. Mm-hmm.
No pressure, but you must make all of them. Thank you, David.
Yeah, once you finish writing the second part of the Further Adventures of Dwayne Fabulosa, the further adventures, of course.
Yeah. Yes. The even further.
Yes.
Yeah. Hey, there it is.
Oh, God. Yeah. Do we want to move on to episode 57? Because, I mean, it leads on directly from that moment. Whoa, big wow. Casula just turned up. this episode, aptly titled Shots and Giggles.
Love it.
I'd be interested to know whether that was the entire kind of inspiration for the characters that they end up fighting or whether that happened afterwards. that's a question that I'm going to have to ask David. I mean, I played a campaign with him once where he literally, we did your idea, Jeremy, where we switched DMs on a natural one, and all he had for his section was the word snakes. And he made a whole thing out of it. Just snakes!
Awesome.
So would not be surprised. I didn't write down a massive summary for this bit because the majority of it is a fight. However, the interesting details are that Tywin Prevost comes out and he is the spitting image of Gilgamesh. Like the only thing that I think is described differently is the hair. Otherwise, you know, same jawline, same body build, all of that, all of those details. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, could be the same person, gets up there, starts speaking the same way, which just makes me so excited for a conversation between Enkidu and Tywin Prevost and like Gwendolyn and Casula, like all of that going on at the same time. Anyway, starts speaking. We hear some information. It's very left wing kind of, or, you know, power to the people kind of conversation of like taking back the power from the Lord's Assembly and giving it back to the people. And that's how he wants to kind of run the country or run all of Dravane. There's also a mention that the way that the Lord's Assembly do things is wrong, because one particular example of this is that we finally find out what happened to Jazana, because the one who they blamed for what happened at the Vondel estate is Jazana, and she gets hanged. What's happened to Oscan?
Yeah, because it's obviously the housekeeper's fault.
Exactly.
The butler did it.
Yeah.
I mean, she was clearly OP. It must have taken a while to hang her because Enkidu couldn't knock her out. But anyway,
he like attached all these weights just to try and do enough falling damage.
Just pulling her down. Oh god.
But so grim.
Harkens back to what you were saying last time we spoke on Superfan Chats, Jeremy, about like David's clever way of like keeping the world ticking over, keeping like every now and then just answering one of those lingering questions that we had going on. Mm-hmm. We finally know what happened to her. And he's about to talk more to this crowd of people when all of a sudden, big bolt comes in from about 200 meters away, massive explosion. Casula like dives in there and gets Tywin Prevost out of the way, taking the brunt of the damage. And then it's just pure carnage. And to be honest, I don't think in this moment that David actually expected them to get to the sniper so fast. But Gaius basically becomes the barred tank of the party and dimension doors up into the tower where this sniper is, while Juna and Gwendolyn are handling things on the floor with a teleporting, darkness-wielding something. We're not sure about
Giggly
that one.
Psycho.
Yeah, and then an arcane archer up there. And David basically, relishing in building these OP enemies that he often does, just kind of like, I feel like he asked the question before he starts. He's like, how can I make this harder for them? How can I kill them faster and watch them scramble? He just absolutely obliterated them with one guy. And this is the thing. He kindly told us both the name, Dane, and the ability of this guy, you know, what class he was. He's a arcane archer fighter, really interesting build, a little bit OP, but he gave us so little information about the other one.
Yes.
I'd be interested hearing what you think, like, classes, subclasses might be there. But basically, there's a whole fight. Everyone's flying all over the place, including Orin. Guy's taking hits in this moment. There's like swinging, you know, Hawkeye style out the window. There's blowing up a tower, so it's coming down. Gwendolyn's punching civilians. It's all great fun. there's like a Yondu moment as well from Guardians of the Galaxy with like the arrow changing direction and hitting them.
I think it's homing arrow.
Yeah. Absolute madness and carnage, but kind of nice to have a big bloody fight after the last few episodes of just kind of like shopping and getting to places to be like, oh, hey, it's only two guys, but you're not going to be able to kill them. Have fun. And then it ended with Enkidu getting very excited about an ability that he's able to use if he kills a person, and basically reaches into this guy as he deals the killing blow and sucks out their soul, very Dementor style, so that there will be an accursed specter at the start of the next episode, I'm assuming.
Can we just put something together about Enkidu having a bunch of people in his mind and this ability? What's going on here?
I mean, that's a sixth level spell ability, or that's a sixth level ability that Hexblades get. I'll read you the text.
This is the thing, actually, Jeremy, because assuming you have read the text as well, same as me, which means that you're probably being like, a DM as clever as David will probably punish Daryl for this, or Enkidu's decision. Because if you read the text, when you look at a cursed specter and then it sends you to the specter stats, they can't talk.
Yeah. That was what I was thinking as well.
And they also hold no connection to their former life or experiences. So I'm a little bit worried that Daryl's just been like, oh, hey, look, here's a new ability that I've learned. I'm going to use it now. Oh, fuck.
Yeah, I really suspect he did not talk that one out with David ahead of time. But this is the actual text. Starting at sixth level, you can curse the soul of a person you slay, temporarily binding it in your service. When you slay a humanoid, you can cause its spirit to rise from its corpse as a specter. When the specter appears, it gains temp HP equal to half your warlock level. It has its own turns. You roll initiative for it. It obeys your verbal commands, and it gains a special bonus to its attack rolls equal to your charisma modifier. The specter remains in your service until the end of your next long rest, at which point it vanishes to the afterlife. You can only use this feature once per long rest. So, if you look at the actual specter stats, as Sam was pointing out, they understand all languages they knew in life, but cannot speak. And then you can read like the actual text as well. They no longer possess connections to who or what they were.
It's going to be interesting to see how they play that one. Because, I think like Hannah was going to say, I wondered whether the Spectre would embody somebody that Enkidu had in their head or something. And I guess we'll see that in the next episode of whether it is just like a, you know, your classic Spectre, like, you know, Dementor-looking thing, or Nazgul, or whether it is something more tailored to Enkidu's past, or, I mean, fingers crossed, an enemy that is still able to share their information with Enkidu, because he's given plenty of options in that moment to be like, don't go through with it. I think when he first started saying it, I was like, oh God, if this is a cursed specter, please don't, please don't, please don't.
Yeah.
Or hang on a second, maybe Enkidu has accidentally downloaded all that information to Erida, and that's why it can't share the information with him. Maybe he's just sent it directly to the cloud.
That would be really interesting.
I mean, it did say that the body disappeared.
Yeah, I assumed that was like a failsafe. So that like if they die, the body is taken, so the evidence is gone. And one thing that I've done, like in the I made like a high magic setting where this kind of stuff is very common, and because like resurrection is super common, or at least commonly available, resurrection is expensive in the world, but speak with dead isn't. So like if you have the corpse, you can just bring it up and have it talk to you. Or if you have like a rogue, a phantom rogue who can turn it into a soul token, they can also like use the soul token and ask it a question. There are like a number of different ways that you can make something talk if you manage to get a hold of the body. And so it may have been one of those like, we take the body. If they take the soul, there's nothing we can do about it. Mm-hmm. But
it's a failsafe. Yeah, clever.
Yeah, we at least get rid of the body.
And get rid of the evidence.
Yeah.
I mean, are we thinking Hex for these guys as well, or something different?
It's hard to know, isn't it? Because, like, I do wonder if it's, like, because David is very good at, like, connecting everything. So even if they're not directly connected to the Hex, I would have a suspicion that they were linked somehow, even if they weren't Hex operatives, especially.
They seem too good for Hex. based on what we've seen. Yeah.
Based on the
just
last gang.
Too organized,
the other,
too competent.
In the other town, yeah.
Yeah.
Or is it just
unless
the,
they're sending out the big guns, yeah. Like, are we seeing the grunts and this is the true caliber that they'd be coming up against?
Yeah. Is that their main guys operate in the big cities and then the kind of small fry operate in the smaller kind of towns and villages.
Mm. I was just wondering about the Lord's Assembly and the consortium and who they might have in their employ in terms of high-level assassins. And
somebody like Beryon, yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. One thing that did puzzle me, and it's part of the reason I've never liked the Arcane Archer, in rules as written, Arcane Archers only have two arcane shots, like two uses of arcane shot that they can use per short rest. And that doesn't scale, which is like insane to me. But let's see, which ones did he use?
He used Enfeebling, definitely.
He used Seeking Arrow.
Well, so that's I'm not sure. I think that's a class feature as opposed to like a reaction that you can take when you miss a shot. I think it's called...
No, Seeking Arrows is actually an arcane shot as well.
Oh, right.
There's Curving Shot where if you miss, yeah. you can use a bonus action to reroll the attack roll against a different target within 60 feet of
which
the original.
Which is what he did to Enkidu, yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, I don't know. Did he use more than two?
I mean, he definitely... Mm.
It seemed like
I think he used two... He definitely used two Enfeebling mm-hmm. shots, both of them on Gaius, because I think he said, like, oh, I'm going to Action Surge and then... Mm-hmm. Enfeebling shot again because it, you know, it's something like it weakens your attack, and then, you know, Chris made that joke about my loot
yes.
is my weapon.
Yeah.
Which I kind of love. Which actually leads me onto a question for you guys. Considering it's been 2 years,
yay.
Happy birthday, by the way.
Happy birthday, No Small Roles.
Considering it's been 2 years of No Small Roles, what is Gaius's subclass? What is going on there? I have never heard him use a subclass feature.
Oh, yeah.
But he does some pretty crazy things with Healing Word, and I don't know if this is just a retcon, but Chris is a very experienced player, David is a very experienced DM, and he actually talked about this in this episode of like, oh yeah, you can't do something like that with your bonus action when you've cast a main spell mm-hmm. on your action. But Chris, or Gaius rather, and this has happened in a few episodes, I've like picked up on it, and it's always with Healing Word, he's able to cast a leveled spell as an action and then suddenly jump in with a healing word on himself or on somebody else. Whereas normally that would be taboo. You know, it'd be two leveled mm-hmm. leveled spell on each thing. I'm like, it's happened enough that I don't think it could be a mistake at this point. So I'm wondering, is there some kind of like weird homebrew subclass that they've created together where he's able to do a healing word? Or have you guys actually heard him use anything like Cutting Words or like School of Eloquence features like, yeah. or anything like that?
I don't think Eloquence existed when they started. Maybe, I was thinking maybe like Whispers?
Yeah, but yeah, College of Whispers, yeah. you get those psychic blades,
yeah,
which
he hasn't
used, and I'm sure if he had them, he would use them, because I played one of those and they were fun.
Unless he's purposely handicapping himself, which does kind of sound quite Chris, actually, for like the lols, but yeah.
Well, yeah, because wasn't there that whole discussion sort of in the beginning about Gaius's background, and actually he's not a very good bard. Like, he has a surprisingly low charisma score for a bard, which I don't think was a mistake on Chris's part.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It sounds like he has a pretty high dex as well. I think he had like a +4 for this one, or I think he said he had a score of like 18. So
maybe he used to be a rogue and he picked up barding.
I wondered that,
because he's got that criminal background, right? Because that's it was like, oh, I'm a bard with a criminal background. But I wonder if he's actually, maybe he's secretly multi-classing and we don't even know.
Yeah,
I wouldn't put.
Maybe he's got like five classes, so he's just got no subclasses. He's just.
Does he get d8s for his inspiration?
Oh, that is a good question.
Oh yeah,
that is a really good question.
He hasn't used bardic inspiration for a while.
But even so, I've never heard him sneak attack.
No.
Never heard him use sneak attack. Never heard him use any like defining class feature.
True, yeah. He doesn't use the... Well, what about Arcane Trickster? Let me see if Arcane Trickster lets you use spells as bonus actions. I'm guessing it doesn't. But let me see. The Mage Hand, I think you can use Mage Hand as a bonus action. Or you can use bonus action to control the hand, But no, that doesn't let you cast healing word.
There's a feat where you can cast two spells, one as a bonus action, isn't there? It's like Warcaster or something.
Oh, that's true. It's not Warcaster, it's
I know with sorcerers you can use quickened spell.
But I know wizards can use it sometimes. But I don't know if it's open to bards as well. I don't know if it's a feat that actually bards are allowed to take.
War magic, I think, just gives you advantage on con saves and means you can cast a spell as a reaction to, like, as an opportunity attack.
Yeah, maybe that's what.
The way that Chris has played this, and, like, you know, I've played with him in loads of other things, he absolutely knows how to track all of the abilities that a character can do. So whether he's choosing not to do these things so as not to, like, let us, the listeners, get, you know, like, oh, I know that you can do that because of this is your subclass or something.
Yeah.
Or whether he's literally just picked the bard NPC out of the book and, like, begun to level that up. That is the only explanation that I have for, like, why you wouldn't, like, use something like cutting words if you were a lore bard or...
He could be a swords bard who doesn't use swords.
Well, he's had that longsword, hasn't he?
Oh, he got a new rapier in episode 54. He got a new rapier and he got a chain shirt. So,
and a crossbow.
And a crossbow.
Yeah.
Yes. He came in with a big, big old crossbow and was like, what's up? And then he made some jokes about not knowing whether to have safety on or off.
He could also be a Valor Bard.
Yeah, but then he'd be able to wear, like, heavy armor, right?
Medium armor shields and you can use martial weapons. So he could use, like, a longsword if he had one. And then the other thing is combat inspiration, where a creature that has a bardic inspiration die from you can roll it and add it to weapon damage that it just made. Alternatively, when an attack roll is made against the creature, it can use its reaction to roll the bardic inspiration die and add the number rolled to its AC. But nobody's used that either. So that makes me think that it's maybe whispers, or not whispers, sorry, swords. And he's just never, ever used a sword. Because all of your stuff is everything in that subclass surrounds blades. And if you just don't use swords, then you never use any of the abilities.
I mean, the only thing I can, like, yeah, I think you're right. It's either that or he and David have come up with something very, very specific. And, you know, because, I mean, you know, they came up with a way of decorum. They changed the hex blade so it works more with... Enkidu being able to have, like, different weapons that do different things and, like, have different bonuses. Really cool element to it. Even, like, you know, Orin to some extent has homebrewed small parts of, I think it's the artillerist, artificer, if you're David. But yeah, with Chris, it's just because I've never heard any, like, flavor above bard to let me know what he's accessing there. Yeah, it does make you wonder if he's been, like, he stayed like a level 2 or 3 bard and multi-classed into something else entirely and will at some point, probably end game, just be like, oh my god, I was a barbarian the whole time. And then, you know, running with a great axe. Who knows? Who knows with Chris
They're
Watt?
Also full of secrets.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. All of them.
We got to sneak into that D&D Beyond campaign if they have one.
Yeah. Wait, he's not on there. I had access to it. I looked.
Because I was going to say, like, wait a minute. I think Dwayne might be in there. Let me see.
They've closed it all off now. It's all private. Yeah. At the character information, that is. Because I used to be able to look at... I can't remember. I think it was Enkidu. I could see, like, the Enkidu shields. Oh, that's interesting. But then Daryl's always been very upfront and open with what he can do on his character. But yeah. Chris is keeping that one under wraps. Yeah. Maybe by the fourth year, we'll know what he's doing.
Yeah,
probably not.
Or it'll just be an even bigger mystery.
When he opens his bar in Vernot Rise.
Yeah.
Called Weatherspoons.
Way.
Or he's the faceless footman.
Oh, I mean, he's missing part of his face.
Right? Shall we round up with a favorite moment or thing from each of us?
Do we want to roll initiative to see who gives a moment first?
Oh my god, I don't have any dice with me.
Oh, well, no,
you get a natural one.
use an online dice roller.
Oh my god.
Okay,
I have so many dice and none in this room.
D20, right? Are we going green die, purple
just
die,
go on
or
the
red
just
die?
Go on your computer and find one.
I'm doing it.
I'm on it.
Okay, rolling with green.
I'm gonna roll mine right now.
That is a natural 17, guys.
Okay.
Oh. That's a 2.
16.
An 11 for me. So what is that? Sam, Hannah, me, Pippa?
Mm-hmm.
Sure, all right. Think
nobody's
about
got any modifiers for this, have they? Who's very dexy?
Sadly, no.
I'm not dexy.
Favorite moment for me. Favorite moment. I'm torn between two off the top of my head. The first one would be... No, I'm not going to mention that because somebody else might come up with it. It's the whole, it's the Ailish encounter. I just loved that moment of them just having that banter together. And it was just kind of, I don't know. I think Chris even mentioned it at the time. He's like, you know, I go way more Ailish, you know, when I'm with somebody from Ailin. And it was that whole kind of like Revertigo scenario that I just kind of loved, even if it all ended in tears.
I think my favorite is probably going to be Gwen flirting with Mossy, just because it was so sweet and so like a little bit awkward. And also I love me some queer representation. It was great. Super great.
Good choice.
She's got to be a key NPC now.
Yeah. Got to come back.
My favorite moment was the sniper attack. I enjoyed the shock of just like, oh dang,
I think it was popping off now.
Yeah, and I think it was interesting to see Tymon as like this very like seemingly a revolutionary figure, a change, like a figure who's tried to change things for the better. Perhaps we get like a lore dump and then it's just like, no, and it's like, oh no, and suddenly he's in trouble. Gwendolyn's mentor is in trouble, and like it's chaos. And it was like, oh, here we go. And I was there like rubbing my hands. That's absolutely my favorite kind of thing, is everybody goes like, oh no. And the DM's just like grinning.
Just perfectly pitched.
I mean, the stakes hit a natural 20 in that whole moment, didn't they? Like, they went from like, oh, this is interesting, like you say, dialogue, exposition, understanding. Oh my God.
Yeah.
Well, I'm going to pick something that's silly, but I have to pick it, which is the horses are called Pip and Lord Crumpet.
Yeah.
I mean, it would be remiss of me to choose anything else, but if you look up what my name means, it means lover of horses.
Really?
As a small kid, I was obsessed with horses. I went horse riding every like Saturday and went down and helped at the local stables, like dealing with all the horses and things.
Oh,
and
great choice, everyone.
Weirdly, there was actually a horse. There was a horse called Pippa that I used to ride, and everyone got really confused.
Whoa. Wow.
But yeah, so I couldn't pick anything else this time, I'm afraid.
That's brilliant.
Is Pippa short for Philippa?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay, yeah. Because Philip means the same thing. Yeah,
yeah,
that's cool.
Yeah, 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 yeah. So, I don't know.
That's
amazing. It made me happy.
Aww.
Yeah.
Aww.
Yeah, that's way better because I'm like quite scared of horses. So, I'm glad you got horses named.
You don't want to be a horse called Hannah then.
Probably not. No.
No. You can be a squirrel.
That's cool. I'm down with that. Some kind of strange woodland creature.
Can't be scared of imaginary horses.
Mm. I absolutely can be scared of imaginary horses if I want to. So definitely check out the Patreon, because as we've heard, lots of things go down on there and you can actually influence the campaign and all the sort of encounters they might have. Mm-hmm. And David also releases all kinds of like cool subclasses and homebrew things. You actually get to see all the nitty gritty detail of what goes on, and you get to support this amazing podcast, which only gets better and better. And I can't wait for us to come back for another Superfan Chats and start putting more red string on our conspiracy board.
Still going, that board.
Oh, it's gotten so much messier after this few episodes. So I guess that's it from us for this time, and we'll see you in the next one. Should we do the thing?
We'll do the thing.
I think we do the thing.
I'm loading it up.
Anon for now!
Hold up.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.